Hey guys, before we jump into today's episode, we wanted to let you know that we are finally launching our flagship Atomic Anesthesia platform on Monday, February 23rd. You have to be on our email list to get our founding member rate. So if you are not, go ahead and head on over to Instagram, DM us the word newsletter, or you can go in the show notes below and download any one of our freebies that'll get you on the list as well. That's Monday, February 23rd. Mark your calendars. You don't want to miss it. We wanted to make this absolutely unlike anything else that is out there. Of course, you guys already know that Professor Temmermans has such a gift in terms of being able to explain complex topics quite simply, and she's really brought that magic to this platform. We've got a quiz builder. We've got a ton of worksheets and downloads and audio files. It really is a multimodal platform. We can't wait for you to jump in. All right, we'll see you there. Remember, Monday, February 23rd. All right, enjoy the episode.
Welcome to the Atomic Podcast. Whether you're a nurse anesthesia resident in CRNA school or an RN trying to get there, you're in the right place.
I'm Sachi, and along with Rhea, we're going to talk all things anesthesia and science, and we're going to bring along some of our friends too.
Join us each week as we dive into all things science and anesthesia.
Welcome to the Atomic Anesthesia Podcast. I'm your host, Professor Rhea Temmermans, and today we're covering a remarkable drug that has recently come into regular anesthesia practice. It rapidly reverses neuromuscular blocking drugs like rocuronium and becuronium and has very minimal side effects. Yes, today we will be covering Sugammadex. This revolutionary drug has transformed our approach to neuromuscular blockade reversal. And as nurse anesthesia residents, understanding this medication is really crucial for your clinical practice. So today we'll discuss its mechanism of action, pharmacokinetics, pharmacodynamics, dosing, administration, efficacy, side effects, and some special considerations in pretty great detail. So let's get started. Sugammadex is sold under the brand name Bridion and is a selective relaxant binding agent designed specifically to reverse neuromuscular blockade induced by rocuronium or becuronium, and only those two drugs. It doesn't reverse any other neuromuscular blocking drugs. It was first approved, actually, by the European Medicines Agency in 2008 and then later by the FDA in 2015. Making a significant advancement in anesthetic practice. Now, while this was approved in 2015, because of the cost, a lot of people really didn't start using it regularly until probably the past, I would say, 3 to 5 years. You know, a lot of times in hospital settings, the pharmacy will control the cost of the medications and which medications you can or cannot use. And so there's still a lot of hospitals out there, especially in the United States, that is still forcing practitioners to use the neostigmine glyco mixture, but a lot more I see when I travel to different hospitals, Sugammadex is becoming a standard of care. The name Sugammadex is actually derived from its structural components of the actual molecule. So SU is actually short for sugar, because it has some sugar elements to its structure, and gamma-dex is for the gamma cyclodextrin structure within the molecule. If you actually look at a picture of the molecule, it kind of looks like almost like a flower, or I call it a donut sometimes, or a circle. So it basically looks like this circular molecular structure, and it has these kind of almost like petals that come off of it. So let's talk about its mechanism of action. So Sugammadex, like I said, is this modified gamma cyclodextrin molecule that has a lipophilic core, so a lipid-loving core, and a hydrophilic exterior, so, you know, a water-loving exterior. And this structure actually allows it to form a one-to-one complex with the rocuronium or the becuronium. The negatively charged carboxyl thioether groups, when you think of thio, you think of like sulfur, right? And ether groups on the outer surface of the Sugammadex attracts to the positively charged quaternary nitrogen groups of rocuronium or becuronium. So Sugammadex is very negatively charged and the rocuronium is very positively charged. And what happens is it causes this encapsulation process to occur. And when the Sugammadex encapsulates the rocuronium or the vecuronium molecule, it effectively inactivates these neuromuscular blocking agents from binding to any more nicotinic receptors and causing their effect. This in turn rapidly reduces their concentration at the neuromuscular junction. The binding between Sugammadex and the rocuronium is very tight and very selective, and it's this high affinity is what sets Sugammadex apart from other traditional reversal agents like neostigmine, which works in a totally different mechanism of action, right? It works by inhibiting acetylcholinesterase. So we'll save that for another episode. Now, let's break down the pharmacokinetics of Sugammadex in more detail. So after IV administration, Sugammadex does rapidly distribute throughout the body. It has a distribution half-life of about 1 to 2 minutes, and it has a volume of distribution of about 11 to 14 liters in adults that have normal renal function. Unlike many other drugs, Sugammadex is actually not very metabolized by the body, and instead, it's eliminated primarily through renal excretion, almost unchanged, within about 24 hours. The elimination half-life is about 100 minutes in adults with normal renal function, but this can be prolonged in patients with renal impairment. Now, it's important to note that Sugammadex's pharmacokinetics are actually affected by several factors. Renal function is really a critical determinant because the drug really does rely on renal excretion. In people that have pretty severe renal impairment, meaning a creatinine clearance of less than about 30 mLs per minute, the clearance of Sugammadex is reduced to about 20 mLs per minute compared to about 120 mLs per minute in people that have normal renal function. Body weight also plays a role. Obese patients show a longer elimination half-life. And interestingly, the ethnic background also has been found to affect Sugammadex's pharmacokinetics, showing that Asian patients actually require a slightly lower dose compared to other patients, which is true for many other drugs. Now, the pharmacodynamic effects of Sugammadex is pretty rapid and dose-dependent. It does quickly reverse neuromuscular blockade by reducing its concentration at the neuromuscular junction, and the onset is really fast, especially compared to neostigmine, and the reversal can occur within about 2 to 3 minutes in most cases. The rapid reversal is due to this really high association rate constant and the creation of a concentration gradient that favors the movement of rocuronium and vecuronium away from the neuromuscular junction. So as it's binding to these drugs within the plasma, it causes a gradient within the plasma, drops the plasma levels really low, and actually draws the rocuronium and vecuronium away from the neuromuscular junction. So the dosing of Sugammadex is based on actual body weight and the depth of the neuromuscular blockade. So you need to test the train of four and take that into consideration when you're determining the dose. So for just routine reversal, patients that have at least two twitches on the train of four stimulation, the dose is 2 mg/kg IV. This is based on the insert that comes with the drug, based on what the company has determined. Now, I will say that there have been some recent studies that have come out that have shown that actually we may require much less of a dose. We don't quite require that 2 mg/kg in order to get adequate reversal. But for now, the company still states that the dose is 2 mg/kg for standard routine reversal on patients that have a train of four of 2 or more. If you have a patient that has a pretty profound block, so somebody with no twitches, the dose is twice that. So it's going to be 4 mg/kg IV. And then if you say you're intubating and you just push the rocuronium, so this is during induction and intubation, the dose is very high. It's 16 mg/kg IV. Okay, this is for immediate reversal. And really this high dose is necessary to encapsulate all of that circulating rocuronium very, very quickly. Now, just keep in mind that these doses are for adults. So when it comes to pediatrics, the doses may differ, and it's actually not very well studied in pediatrics. So for kids that are aged 2 to 17, a similar weight-based dosing can be used, but the safety and the efficacy hasn't really been studied in children under 2 years. Oftentimes, also, you can dilute the Sugammadex down to more accurately give the pediatric dose. oftentimes find that when I'm doing pediatric anesthesia, I'm not giving a whole lot of muscle relaxant anyway. Kids' muscles aren't very well developed. Neuromuscular junction isn't very well developed. So unless it's a really big case, oftentimes I'm just avoiding giving muscle relaxant altogether. Other small facts that you should know about it is you can give it as a single IV bolus into an existing line. It's compatible with most of our perioperative fluids like normal saline, LR, D5. It shouldn't be mixed with any other medication, so you should just give it on its own. And then just make sure that you flush that IV line pretty adequately when you administer different drugs. Now, how has it done in clinical trials? Well, Sugammadex has shown that it provides very rapid and very effective reversal of muscle relaxants, and it's about 10 minutes faster than neostigmine for moderate paralysis and up to 45 minutes faster if you have deep paralysis. In one pretty big study, Sugammadex at 16 mg per kg was able to reverse pretty profound rocker uronium induced blockade, which is about, you know, a dose of maybe 1.2 mg per kg within about 3 minutes, and which was also much faster than spontaneous recovery of succinylcholine. So just keep that in mind. You know, oftentimes when we think of a difficult intubation, we pretty commonly go after the succinylcholine and use that along with the propofol because it's almost a standard of care for a rapid sequence induction. But what the study is showing is that if you're giving a RSI dose of rocuronium, which is, you know, 1.2 mg per kg or higher, and then you have that Sugammadex ready, that 16 mg per kg, that these patients recover 3 minutes faster than if you use the succinylcholine and let that spontaneously wear off. Because we don't have any antidote for succinylcholine, right? We have no reversal for that. We just let that wear off. We let, you know, if we can't get the intubation, we just let the propofol and the succinylcholine wear off. But this study is saying that the rocuronium Sugammadex mixture is actually faster, which is pretty cool. Because of this rapid reversal, it really has improved patient safety. It does reduce postoperative respiratory complications, does lead to faster OR turnover times, and does reduce overall hospital costs. So many positive things that come along with using this medication. Now, Sugammadex does have a pretty favorable safety profile, but there are a few side effects that you should know about. Perhaps the most common side effect is bradycardia. And the incidence is about 2% in those that get this medication. And the idea behind this is that because of the rapid reversal of the neuromuscular blocker, there's this like subsequent slight increase in vagal tone, and that's what causes the bradycardia. Other side effects that you may see with Sugammadex, patients could experience nausea and vomiting and sometimes even some pain. Probably a more rare side effect is anaphylaxis. There have been cases also of bronchospasm and even cardiac arrest. Now, I've never seen anaphylaxis or cardiac arrest, but I have had patients that have had bronchospasm after giving Sugammadex, and it happens almost immediately after you give it via IV. So just keep in mind that if you're giving the Sugammadex at the end of the case and you haven't started to wake that patient up yet, and all of a sudden you're hearing your vent alarm, your high pressure alarm, your peak pressures are going up, you know, you see maybe some tachycardia, some hypoxia, or you try to bag, you set it to manual, try to bag the patient, you feel that's really tight and hard to squeeze, it's probably due to bronchospasm as a result of giving the Sugammadex. So you want to treat it just like any other bronchospasm, right? You might want to increase your inhalational anesthetic, deepen the patient a little bit, give some albuterol, give some epi, even give some ketamine, it can be used to treat bronchospasm. So just keep that in mind. As with any patient that gets neuromuscular blockade, there's always a risk that there could be recurrent paralysis. This is the case for even when we're in neostigmine and glycopyrrolate. This happens with Sugammadex also. And so one study looked at 100 patients. For every 100 patients that got Sugammadex, about 2 of them had recurrent paralysis in the PACU. So keep that in mind. Pretty much this occurs when the dose of Sugammadex is really insufficient to encapsulate all of this circulating neuromuscular agent. And so whatever remaining rocuronium and vecuronium molecules are in the bloodstream, they then redistribute to the peripheral tissue again. Other special considerations to keep in mind. Now, we talked about patients that have renal impairment. And if somebody has renal impairment, you actually don't need to adjust the dose at all for, you know, mild to moderate renal impairment. But it is really not recommended to give Sugammadex to people that have very severe impairment or dialysis, because we're worried about this prolonged elimination half-life, and there's not a lot of data looking at this yet. Now, there was one study, I think, that came out of Texas that I saw probably in the past year. They did a 7-year study where they looked at Sugammadex in people that had end-stage renal failure, and they did not see any incidences of, you know, increased or recurrent paralysis in these patients. They really didn't see any side effects at all in people that were like on dialysis, end-stage renal patients. So it doesn't seem like it's clinically relevant if people that have end-stage renal disease get Sugammadex, and eventually it gets dialyzed out. I think there's a certain, you know, kind of dialysis that needs to be used in order to get Sugammadex molecules out. But basically what the study showed, that nothing bad happened when you gave Sugammadex to people that had end-stage renal disease. So keep that in mind. The dose is still based on the actual body weight, even in patients that have very, very high BMI, even a BMI over 40. And this is because the Sugammadex distributes primarily to the extracellular fluid, and the extracellular fluid does increase proportionally with the total body weight. All right, so we're going to use the actual body weight for this. Age is also a factor. So with the pediatric patients, they're going to reverse a little bit faster. With the elderly patients, they're going to reverse a little bit slower. You know, there's lots of differences within the body composition and the organ function between these two age groups. And it's also important to note that Sugammadex can actually increase your bispectral index value. This may be potentially due to the fact that you're waking the patients up, right? I didn't look at the study and how they came up with this, but, you know, you're usually giving Sugammadex at the end of the case when you're titrating off the medication anyway. So it's hard to say whether it's the Sugammadex itself, or, you know, if you're also, you know, reversing the muscle relaxant and the muscles start kind of activating again and working, the bispectral index can actually pick up a lot of EMG activity, so a lot of muscle activity, which is artifact, and that can artificially elevate the BIS values. So, you know, just something else to keep in mind with the BIS values. Sugammadex does have some unique drug interactions that CRNA should be aware of. So it can technically interfere with the efficacy of hormonal contraceptives, birth controls, which can reduce their effectiveness. So people should just be advised to, you know, keep that in mind, use alternative contraceptive methods for 7 days after receiving Sugammadex. So despite Sugammadex's efficacy, I mean, the drug works so well, we still need quantitative neuromuscular monitoring. It's just totally essential to continue to use our train of four monitors. You know, using our peripheral nerve stimulators or our quantitative monitors is really essential to really determine the dose and the timing, and making sure that our train of four ratio is above 0.9 for full recovery. And we get these values using the quantitative measures. Just be aware that you could have residual blockade if the dose is not high enough, especially if you're not monitoring the patient PACU for this. So we need to use our quantitative monitors to both prevent underdosing, which can lead to residual paralysis, and overdosing, which is honestly just costly and unnecessary. So keep that in mind when you're choosing the dose for your patient. So overall, Sugammadex really has, I think, revolutionized our approach to how we reverse neuromuscular blocking drugs. You know, when I was training 12 years ago, we only had neostigmine and glycopyrrolate. Those drugs are still necessary to learn because Sugammadex only reverses rocuronium and vecuronium. It doesn't touch our other non-depolarizing muscle relaxants like sacecurium and other medications that may come into market when there are shortages. Every once in a while, we don't have enough vec or roc, and then I see atricurium in the drawer. So there are other medications that sometimes you may have to give, and you still have to know how to dose neostigmine and glycopyrrolate. But the thing with those drugs is you have to get them much earlier than the Sugammadex. You have to give them oftentimes when the surgeon is still closing. And that can be scary sometimes because you don't want the patient to start moving or coughing while they're still working. But then you don't want your patient to be paralyzed for, you know, 30 minutes after the case. So Gammadex has made waking up a lot quicker, a lot easier. Patients, you know, if you get them pretty light, they move almost instantly after you give the Gammadex. So it's been really a great and valuable tool in our anesthesia arsenal that has a really good safety profile. So as future nurse anesthesiologists, of course, you guys are experts in drugs and you'll be an expert now in Gammadex, which will be a fundamental tool to providing safe and effective anesthesia. If you like these types of pharmacology episodes where we take a pretty deep dive into just one topic, let us know which one you want to hear next. You can always email me, Rhea@atomicanesthesia.com. I'd love to hear your suggestions so we could plan the next episodes. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.